SeatGeek is the newest sponsor of Off the Ball Network. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a 99.9% chance you love sports. But watching these games in person is super expensive. To help ease the pain in your wallet, use the promo code OffTheBallNetwork to get a $20 discount for first-time users of SeatGeek. Your next best night ever is waiting, and SeatGeek has the tickets. The Up and Under podcast is proud to be a part of Off the Ball Network. For all things basketball, football, soccer, golf, baseball, sports betting, you name it, go to offtheballnetwork.com and check out the amazing articles posted by writers of the network, including yours truly, and the other podcasts on basically every sport under the sun. Off the Ball Network, your home for quality sports and entertainment content.
I'm ready when y'all are, I guess.
All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, whatever.
What is good, everybody? It's your boy Francis Carlotta on episode 48 of the Up and Under podcast. After a brief hiatus, we're back talking NBA. We got a lot to cover, talking potential NBA trades, a certain Demetrius Jamal Morant, the Brooklyn Nets, and much, much more. But before we get into it, I got to introduce the guest. Well, not really the guest, the co-host of the show. Guess is a bit superfluous of me, and I apologize for that. So the co-host of the show, no Connor Byrne. He's doing his thing in business school, so hopefully he's doing all right. You know, I'm sure Connor's always doing all right. Once you say, once you feel the breeze of the wind on you, you just know that Connor's there. So hopefully he's okay. No Connor, but we are joined by a man who I think, of all my friends that I have in this world, Grant Hechinger is one of the smoothest people I know. I don't think he considers himself smooth, but I consider Grant a very smooth human being. So, Grant, hopefully, do you consider yourself smooth? Because I do. I don't know about you.
Do you mean like socially or like physically? I'm not sure what you mean.
Take that however you want, I guess. You know, maybe all of the above.
I'll give a quote from a guy who was a Rhodes basketball player, graduated the year before I got there, but was really good. Name was Andrew Gallo. He was like one of the best Rhodes basketball players ever. But my freshman year, I was playing pickup with him, and he said, "Grant always looks good, even if he's not good." So he was like, no matter what, even if he's not playing well, even if it's not going in, like it looks really good. So like that'll be my answer.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And since we have no Connor Byrne, we got another fantastic person to be on the pod today from Off the Ball Network, from the Up in Flames podcast, a fan of a team that has yet to beat my University of Michigan in about 2 years, and a team who hasn't won the Big Ten in 2 years, a team that, thank God, did not beat Georgia in the college football playoff. Oh, my God. If Ohio State beat Georgia and then won the national championship after Michigan beat them, not beat them, whooped them in the regular season and won the Big Ten, that would have just broken my soul. But all that aside, we're here to talk ball. It's my guy, Mo Murphy. How you doing, man? Welcome to the podcast.
Yo, what's good, bro? Definitely glad to be on. And you just got to keep putting Band-Aids on the wound, huh? Like, you just can't let it ride.
We're still ripping them off. Like, I'm ripping off the Band-Aid. I'm not letting that heal, man.
Bro, I gotta live with that until, what, November of next year? And hopefully I don't have to live with that for a third year in a row. So, you know, it's tough. Even if we would have won the national championship, the thing is, Michigan still has – it would have helped, but it still don't change the fact we haven't beat Michigan in 2 years.
Interesting.
It still doesn't change the fact. Like,
no, so
for real, national championship, well, I would have celebrated. Like, yeah, we're national champions, yeah. But I could say anything to every team except Michigan. Like, Michigan could still be like, you whooped us and we won the Big Ten. And it's like, that's true. Like, I still couldn't say we don't have that over Michigan just because we would have won the national championship if we had won.
Interesting, because I feel like maybe you know, I'm not tapped into the Ohio State fandom like you are. I mean, you do Locked On Buckeyes and everything, which is fantastic. So is that a common idea? I just assume more.
It seems like a very self-aware sports fan take. Yeah, that's not a fan take you hear from a lot of fans. So
I agree. So like Mo, is that common? Like, do you?
I would probably say no. I would say like, had we beat Georgia and won the national championship, I feel like the first thing Ohio State fans would have did is like at all their Michigan buddies, like, we won the national championship, but it's like, so what? Like, it's great. Don't get me wrong. Like, winning the national championship, sure, it doesn't matter who you lose to prior to that, but it's still one of those, like, it doesn't change the fact that we skipped the COVID year. So we haven't beat Michigan since 2019. So Michigan fans can still be like, we're still the Big Ten champs. We still beat you 2 years in a row. We're still going to go into November. Like, come next season, winning the national championship isn't going to matter because we're going to come into next season in November and you still have to beat us to really run the Big Ten. So, yeah, that's one of those. Yeah, it's still, Michigan fans would still have that over us regardless.
Okay. Well, look, like Grant said, I mean, that's a very self-aware sports
fan. You sound healthy, man. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, I'm not too biased. Like, I understand the situation being an Ohio State fan. Like, Francis could talk, even if we won the national championship, Francis could have that all next year going into the game next year. He'd be able to say whatever. And it's like, you're right. Y'all won the national championship, but you still can't beat Michigan. And what am I going to say? Like, we got whooped by Michigan 2 years in a row. Like, it's not like we just lost by a touchdown. We got whooped.
Fair enough. I mean, the last thing I'll say, and we'll get into the NBA, is at the very least, you know, a year after a decade of just Ohio State dominance in the rivalry, it is nice to have the juice back in it. You know what I mean? We can go to the game in late November and be actually, both sides can be pumped, be genuinely excited for this awesome rivalry between the teams, where before it was just a foregone conclusion, yeah, Ohio State's going to win. Now it's a legitimate rivalry. Now it's back to being a legit rivalry. And that's exciting. That's fun, man. That's fun for college football. It's fun for sports fans. So we'll see. I mean, going into next year, hell, you might get CJ Stroud back. He hasn't declared yet. It's 7:55 in the a.m. in the West Coast. He got till tomorrow. So, shoot.
Don't get me excited.
I'm just saying. We'll see. But all right, let's get into the NBA. Let's do it. So let's start talking about trade season, because we – all the restrictions for the contracts, the recently signed stuff, all those restrictions on being trade eligible, to my knowledge, they're gone. So if you were recently signed, you had, I think, 60 days, or I can't remember the exact terms. Don't quote me. By the way, there was a time frame where you couldn't be traded, but I know that's over. So now it's pretty much open season to trade people, and it's that time before the trade deadline in about like a month or so, maybe a month and a half. So let's start talking trades. And Grant, I'm going to start with you because I love hearing your trades. I think you're very good at them and you make some really fun ones. So, Mr. Hechinger, give me a fascinating trade for us to mull over.
All right. I've got four. So are we going to want to like alternate, go back and forth here?
We'll go back and forth. I have two. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. My imagination does not stop at two. So I'll start with like the one that I think is probably the farthest out there, not and less least realistic, but I think maybe is the most interesting. And that's a Knicks Suns trade. So the assumption here is the Suns keep struggling, and they kind of want to do a mini reset. They want to get a little younger, kind of rebuild their team, just slightly restructure it a little bit. Whereas the Knicks are kind of going all in, really like what they have with Jalen Brunson, really like what they have with Julius Randle, but maybe think the RJ Barrett spot could use a little bit of a changing. The trade here is Mikal Bridges, Cam Payne, Torrey Craig, and Damian Lee for RJ Barrett, Derrick Rose, Emmanuel Quickley, and one or two first round picks, depending on what the negotiations turned out to be. The Knicks have quite a few extra first round picks to play with, including Dallas's this year. So could be, you know, their pick and Dallas's pick this year. Could just be one of those. I'll let y'all decide if y'all think what the value should be there. But I think, like I said, the the Suns get a little bit of a reset, maybe try to open a new championship window because they think their current one's closed. They get Chris Paul, you know, backups and insurance and quickly and Derrick Rose. And then Bridges just kind of fits what the Knicks and I mean, every team really, but yeah. The Knicks especially, they need more than Barrett. And he's on one of the best deals in the league. It's going to be like $22 million a year over the next four or 5 years. And so they've got a lot of flexibility with that to keep building the roster around Brunson, Bridges, and Randall. So I just kind of would really like that Knicks team if that happened. And the Suns don't seem like their window is currently wide open right now, so probably could use a little bit of a reshuffling. What do you think?
Interesting. When I was looking at trade stuff, I didn't include – I didn't include Mikal Bridges in any of my potential trades because of that such team-friendly contract that I feel like if I'm Phoenix, I would just rather hold on to it and let Chris Paul's contract expire and just let that like use that money that they're not paying Chris Paul anymore to try and retool the roster, but keeping Mikal Bridges because he's still such a valuable. I mean, look, I mean, I'll mention this in a bit, but the 3-and-D archetype of NBA player is probably the most valuable archetype in the NBA. And Mikal Bridges fits that to a T. So I was hesitant. I didn't include Mikal Bridges in any trades, but that's an interesting one. I think the caveat is fair that Phoenix would have to continue to be where they're at now, or maybe even regress slightly to consider trading Mikal Bridges. And I think the Knicks would have to include a good amount of draft equity because I just don't think they have, I mean, Phoenix would have to love RJ Barrett, and maybe they do. Maybe they really like RJ Barrett, and he's had a slightly improved year this year. And I'm still an RJ Barrett believer, but Phoenix would really have to believe in him and like the draft equity. Emmanuel Quickley is a good young guard. Derrick Rose, I mean, he's older now, so that's not that big of a deal. But I like IQ. Emmanuel Quickley is a good player. So I mean, that's interesting. There's a lot of variables that it would depend on, but that's very interesting. Mo, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot. Like, I don't dislike it. My only thing is with the Knicks, like where they're at right now. Like, do they think that makes them better? Because essentially, they're a playoff team right now. I think they're the sixth seed, so they are a playoff team. So, are you willing? Like, you just signed RJ Barrett. Has he not shown you enough to give up on him right now? And that's kind of the key. I know they're looking at trading Derrick Rose. And then I would say Emmanuel Quickley has emerged. So, like, maybe has his price gone up? Do you like Damian Lee as opposed to – because I think the Knicks are starting to feel like maybe they can win something. And so does that trade set them back a year and basically start the rebuild? And I wouldn't even say that's not a rebuild, but is Jalen Brunson, Mikal Bridges, and Julius Randle going to win you a first round? Or do you like what you have right now to at least win – in the first round, but like I wouldn't even thought of that though. So like that's actually like it, that's why I think it's a great trade, just because I would not have went there at all.
Yeah,
great trades.
Yeah, I wouldn't have went there at all.
Your point on the 3-and-D thing, totally agree with. I think that's like the hardest thing about wanting to try to trade one of these 3-and-D guys is like, why would any team want to trade this guy? Like, this is what every single team wants. It's like if you're starting a sort of mini rebuild or something, that's a guy you automatically just want to check that box, have that guy on your team. And especially with Mikal Bridges' contract, you're right, like very team friendly. So that's why this is probably less realistic. I'm with you, Mo, on like maybe the Knicks just like what they have right now. They're doing pretty well. I think they do get better with the Mikal Bridges move, but you know, it might be too much. The two first round picks might be one first round pick, might be, I mean, maybe they could be negotiations where there's, you know, a couple second round picks instead of a first round pick or something like that. So it might be end up being too much, but I think there is like some structure there that could maybe help teams out depending on how they're feeling about themselves. And like you said, how the Suns feel about RJ Barrett.
Yeah, I it's definitely an interesting trade. And I'm excited to hear your other ones. If that was your least likely one, I'm excited to hear what the other ones are. That's for sure. I'll throw one out and then we can go to Mo for any trades and go back to Grant. So I'll start with, all right, let's see, which one should I start with? I'll do the Dallas Mavericks trade Dwight Powell, Josh Green, a 2024 top 10 protected first round pick, a 2026 lottery and protected first-round pick, and a 2025 second-round pick for San Antonio's Jakob Poeltl. I really think Jakob Poeltl would clean up a lot of defensive problems that the Mavericks have, especially since he's such a good interior defender and a rim protector. Dwight Powell is fine as a rim runner, but he's not that good of a rim protector. And having Poeltl as a pick-and-roll big and a genuine rim-protecting big as well would allow Christian Wood to start at the four, which he's more naturally built to play the four than the five. To me at least. So I think it just allows the team more lineup flexibility and gives them a defensive anchor that they don't have, which has hurt them since their defensive efficiency rating isn't that good. I think I'd have to – let me just check really fast. I'm pretty confident that the Mavericks are the 23rd in defensive efficiency. So I think Jakob Poeltl would help a lot of those interior issues. And, you know, giving up that haul, it might be too rich for some people's blood. But think about it this way. The Mavericks are always going to be good with Luka Doncic. That first-round pick is usually always going to be in the late first round. So if for whatever reason they have a bad year, the 2024 is a top 10 protected, 2026 is the lottery protected. So there's protections on them. So it's not the end of the world trading two unprotected picks. And a second-round pick, yeah, there's value in it. But, you know, I think Jakob Poeltl really helps Dallas and helps vault them to another tier of contender, not just this year, but moving forward. So what do y'all think?
I love Jakob Poeltl on the Mavericks. Think that's a great fit. Mavericks are a team I have in a trade here. So they're clearly like a team that obviously needs to make some additions. That is a little too rich for my blood. I would take Josh Green out of the trade, basically. Maybe see if okay. I can put, if it needs salary filler, put someone else in. But take Josh Green out of the trade. I'm like, if I'm the Mavericks, I'm not in the business of trading any of my like good pieces, since they have, I feel like, not enough good pieces. I'm not in the business of trading any of my good pieces unless it's a player that's like really going to change our outlook. And Jakob Poeltl isn't going to quite do that. He's going to be really helpful and like exactly what they need, but he's not going to like make them into a bona fide, like, you know, top tier contender. But I like the idea. So take Josh Green out of that trade, and I'm 100% for it. Love it.
Cool. Yeah, I wasn't sure how highly San Antonio valued Jakob Poeltl. I mean, they're not good this year, and they are likely going to be sellers at the trade deadline. I just didn't know how much they valued him. I mean, he's one of their best players. So I'm just off the top of my head, I feel like they would want at least a young piece or draft compensation. And I just put both just to, I guess, be nice about it. But yeah, I could see potentially San Antonio taking this trade without Josh Green. And if this is a real, you know, we're not NBA GMs. We're not calling teams all the time to figure and talk about trades and doing all these negotiations. But if this is a possibility, if the Mavericks can trade Dwight Powell, a salary filler, and this pick package for Jakob Poeltl, I just do it. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't do that. So that's my two cents. Mo, what you think?
Yeah, I'm with Grant as far as, like, if you take Josh Green out of it, then, like, pull the trigger. I think the Mavericks, I don't think they have enough good pieces to upgrade in a major way. I think they needed to try and do it in free agency. You know, with like a Zach LaVine or a Bradley Beal, like if I was to go all in and put a star next to Luka. So I don't think they have enough good pieces to be trying to give up a whole bunch. But if I could take Green out of it and get him, then now we're talking. Like, to me now, like Dallas, they just went to the Western Conference Finals last year. We know what Luka looks like. So if I can improve in the slightest and even be looked at as a little bit better than I was last year in a wide open Western Conference, then I would definitely pull the trigger on that. And I know Jakob Poeltl can be had. Like, he's been in a lot of rumors. There's a lot of interest in him. So we know he can be had. And I think we all three feel like Dallas are buyers at the trade deadline. So if they're able to acquire him and it's not too rich where I'm giving up too much, I definitely would do it if I'm Dallas.
Yeah.
Echoing that, I think the Mavericks, like you said, don't have enough good pieces. They don't have enough good pieces to make a trade without actually like emptying their cupboard, basically, for a big player. So free agency is what they need to wait for. They need to be operating on this like smaller level. Like, Jakob Poeltl is a perfect kind of target, but as long as you're not giving up a bunch of rotation players for that. They just don't have enough to make that high level trade and then still have like a good foundation around their stars. And the other reason, if there's a reason not to do it, maybe, which I don't think this is a good reason, but I just want to mention it, that Christian Wood has been pretty successful as the only big on the floor when they've gone to those lineups now. Those lineups have improved a lot. So doesn't mean they can't still play those lineups, but this would definitely push him more to the four. But maybe it solves a lot of issues they're having. So I don't think that's a good reason, but I think there would be people that probably would bring that up.
Sure. And, you know, I definitely understand and agree with that idea. I just think if you added Poeltl to that lineup, it just adds more flexibility with possibilities for the Dallas Mavericks to put out a five-man lineup. You can have Poeltl and Wood together. You can have just Poeltl as the lone big, as a lone rim protector. You can have Christian Wood, if you need a little more scoring, to be the lone big in that lineup. So it just gives them more flexibility that they don't really have right now. It took them way too long to figure out how to use Christian Wood, in my opinion. And we've talked about this in the past. Like, this is just taking too long. I don't know how this is January and Dallas has just figured out they have a really good basketball player that they were only playing like 25 minutes a game. Like, that's stupid. That's so dumb. So it's good that they're actually utilizing Christian Wood. All right, let's move on. And enough of that. Mo, you got a trade for us?
Yeah, so y'all got way more creative than I did with trades. Y'all got way more creative. I was thinking about certain teams that need to upgrade. So I went personal, and I went with my Miami Heat. And so I would have wanted this player prior, so I'm not even going to do it because, you know, the rules are can't be a hypothetical trade now. And so now that he's in trade rumors, I can't go get him. But I do want D'Lo on the Miami Heat. So I think there's two contracts Miami needs to get off of, and I think that's Kyle Lowry and Duncan Robinson. So in one trade, I'd say Duncan Robinson, Nikola Jovic, two future firsts and a future second, and give them unprotected if they need to. And I know I didn't put this in the trade machine, but I know there's going to have to be a salary filler. So one of the guys at the bottom of Dwayne Dedman or whatever, I think the Heat need to go get John Collins. And so that in a salary filler for John Collins, he's been in trade rumors for the past 3 years. I think Bam is nice at center. I think if we can get a power forward where we don't have to play this, where we put Bam. And so if it works in the trade machine, cool. I didn't put it in the trade machine, but I do think the Heat need to go get John Collins. I'm looking at the salary cap, and I know like Duncan Robinson, I think Nikola Jovic is a good young piece that Atlanta would love. I think they're missing a shooter with getting rid of Kevin Huerter. And so I think like they could use a Duncan Robinson. I know he's kind of inconsistent, but at the same time, like, you know, sometimes it's just situation and circumstances. So I think they're looking for another shooter. And I think if you could go get John Collins, whatever, make the contracts match up. I know who you're going to have to give up, but add him to a Jimmy, Tyler Hero, and Bam. And I think now the Miami Heat are working with something, because I like John Collins. I really do. I think he's a really good player. I think he would fit perfectly in Miami, him being the four alongside Bam. And you could intertwine those two, as far as it really doesn't matter who plays the four or five. You could run and gun, and it gives another elite. Like, he could shoot a little bit. He could shoot enough. Yeah, it takes a little bit of an offensive load off of Jimmy Butler. And even if you add his inconsistency to Bam's inconsistency, I'm thinking, like, if you put both of them together, one of them are going to be on every night. And so if you add that, where one's going to be on, one's going to be off, it's fine. I think it gives Jimmy Butler a little bit more help. And then, I want John Collins. Like, he's been in trade rumors for too long. I know Miami Heat are interested. They've been interested in him every year. And I think now is the time to pull the trigger, because I really think the NBA is wide open right now. I know, like, Boston and Milwaukee are kind of dominating the East through the regular season. But I think when you look at matchups in a seven-game series, I think the NBA is wide open as far as who could win the championship. So I think the Heat need to make a move. I said it going into the offseason. They made no moves. They added nobody else. They thought the core would improve and Victor Oladipo would be healthy. And it looks cool for now, but at the same time, I think you need to improve if you're trying to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals and essentially get back over that hump and get to the finals. I think John Collins can do that.
Interesting. Grant, I'll let you respond, because you were higher on the Heat than I am. So I'll let you respond.
Yeah, I think this is a trade. John Collins to Heat was like something I thought about in this whole process. And like, I'm not sure if I really looked at it and couldn't figure out exactly what I wanted it to be, but like, it's definitely an idea that I like. I think he kind of fits exactly what they need. Like you said, fits perfectly alongside. And then Jovic to the Hawks, that's something they could reset with a little bit. I like the idea overall. Yeah, like you said, I'm pretty high on the Heat still. We'll talk about playing teams later. And I'll mention them in that and how I'm still high on them kind of. Bam, Jimmy, Tyler Hero and John Collins is pretty damn good. So I like it.
I ain't got too much to add either. I didn't even think about this one. So I love it. I think it's a really, really good idea. Again, I really like trades that allow a team to have more lineup flexibility, to at least have to be able to throw their opposition different looks that they're not. Well, I mean, they may expect it because they watch film and they're NBA teams, but you know what I mean? Be a little more unpredictable with how they attack other teams offensively and defensively. And that trade would allow the Heat to do that. Cause I feel, I was lower on the Heat than both of y'all. Well, I don't know what your projections were for the Heat going into this year, but I know Grant's more of a Heat guy than I am. I was low on him because I feel like they've hit their ceiling and I didn't see how much better they could get as a team. And I thought they would just regress a little bit this year. And they have a little bit. I think they're seventh right now in the Eastern Conference. And they're just kind of in the middle. They're just trying to figure out if they want to make that next move to get back into the top five of the Eastern Conference, which is what I think they want to do to get back to the top of the East. It's not in Pat Riley's nature to tank at all. So they're probably going to try and make a move at the trade deadline. And I think this would really help. Cause like I said, line of flexibility, it's a more dynamic roster if you add John Collins. And I think that'd be cool. So I like that one a lot, Mo, for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, it was personal as far as like, I'm trying to upgrade my Heat. My only problem with that is I think Pat Riley has his eyes on the big fish and the possibility of adding a John Collins go over his head, because like the rumors are like, yeah, we want D'Lo, but the big fish rumors are like the Heat could be in on Bradley Beal and the Heat could be on Zach LaVine if they could be on the trade market over the next month. And when every time the Heat do, they miss because they don't have enough essentially to go get a Zach LaVine, or, you know, they don't have enough to go get a Bradley Beal. And so like, you got a guy like John Collins who for the third year in a row is sitting there in trade rumors. And it seems like, you know, the Hawks have now given John Collins and his team permission to seek a trade. So they're going to call around and find teams that want them. And if it makes sense for the Hawks, it seems like they'll finally pull the trigger. But it's like, if they call the Miami Heat, Pat Riley could wait until the last minute and be like, yes, I'm interested, but I'm waiting to see if LaVine can be had or Bradley Beal can be had, or even a Damian Lillard, you know, like, because they're not playing well right now and he's playing out of his mind, but the Blazers aren't good. And so I think the whole NBA right now is on a chokehold waiting to see if Dame is going to stop that loyalty talk. And that's when Pat Riley will miss out on a piece that could make you a little bit better. And that's all you really need, because he wants the big fish. He wants the star. He wants the exciting player that's going to make the Heat watchable to the rest of the nation, as opposed to everybody within the Heat organization. Like, yeah, you're going to watch the Heat, but like I've always said, they're a boring watch. Like, they're a really good team. They're just a boring watch. And so John Collins doesn't make them any more exciting, but he makes them better.
I think it would make it more exciting. I mean, at least at a dynamic.
Not much. It doesn't do much for me as far as excitement. Like, they'll probably win a lot more games, but it's not like, oh, we added John Collins. This is must-see TV for the Miami Heat now. Like, that's what we've been lacking since LeBron, is like, no matter how good we are, we're just not must-see TV. And I think that's what Pat Riley is seeking. And that's part of the problem of why the Miami Heat are kind of trying to figure it out, because he's so dead set on making Miami Heat must-see TV that you're missing out on the pieces that could actually just help you win more games.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler is a boring, boring star, just wins a lot of games and doesn't really excite anybody. That's
exactly. Literally, he backpacks the Miami Heat, but he's just not exciting to watch. And if he's your best player and you don't have enough pieces around him, then like, they have hit their ceiling. I'm with Francis, like, not making no moves in the offseason. I'm like, okay, they're going to regress. you know, everybody else is trying to get better while Miami's like, we're going to run it back with our core. And I just don't like it. So it's time. Miami has to make a move if they want to be competitive, or they're just going to be a play-in team who gets bounced in the first round.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll talk more about the Heat, I'm sure, when we get to the play-in stuff. All right, so Grant, your turn again. Give me another one.
All right, this is maybe the biggest trade I went for as far as star name power. And seems like a trade that I thought people would have been talking about, but I couldn't find anything people talking about this exact swap. I think people talk about like each of these stars getting swapped to the other team, but not for each other. So, but I think this would be a really good trade to rebalance some rosters here. Trade is the Bulls and the Raptors. The Bulls get Pascal Siakam and Gary Trent Jr. The Raptors get Zach LaVine, Patrick Williams, Kobe White, and 2023 and 2025 first round picks. I didn't assign any protections to like any of my picks here. So just assume whatever the appropriate protections are, there are protections on them. Like these aren't all unprotected picks. I just didn't go that deep into it. I think there are like variations of this where Vucevic or Caruso could be in there instead of Patrick Williams. But I also think the Raptors would really want Patrick Williams and push for him. And probably if it came down to it, would be willing to sacrifice one of the first round picks to get him. But I don't think it would be a major holdup for the Bulls in getting Pascal Siakam. So for the Raptors, it really rebalances the roster. They get more shooting, frees up Scottie Barnes to play the four, because he's a four. He's not a three, and he's basically having to play the three right now, or Pascal's having to play the five. So it just frees up them to play natural positions. OJ Anunoby can play his natural position there at the three. And then the Bulls, you just basically upgrade one of your stars, fits well with their current stars, and they keep you know, all the other pieces basically, except for Patrick Williams. And you were also replace Zach LaVine's spot with a starting caliber guard in Gary Trent Jr. And I also think this could probably be potentially the first of a couple moves for both teams. I think they could after this have more moves down the line if they weren't done. So
yeah. Interesting. How much better do you think that trade makes both teams? Like what is the end goal with that trade? And you said there could be other additional moves. So is this just like a building block move, or like how much better do you think this helped? How much more than I can't speak. How much more do you think this helps both squads?
The Raptors are probably worse in the short run because Pascal Siakam is really good. And like losing that and replacing that's going to be hard, but I know this is an all in on Scottie Barnes and building around him type of thing. It's up for debate whether that he's worth it and whether they think he's worth it. I know like coming into the season, he was regarded extremely highly, and he's not as much for good reason. I wasn't as high on him coming into the season either. I thought people were getting a little ahead of themselves, like basically calling him a guaranteed superstar. But he's a good player. So if they want to go all in on him, this really goes in all on him, OG and Zach LaVine, and balance the roster around that. The Bulls, I think, get better because Pascal Siakam is really good, and right. I think fits really well with them. They're probably still not like immediately a contender because of this, because they're still probably waiting on Lonzo to come back. We'll see when he comes back. But once you get Lonzo back into it, they have other moves they can make if they wanted to be Vucevic or DeRozan. But you've got a really good foundation there with Lonzo and Pascal Siakam, and then whatever they want to put around them. So I think that probably neither team is like better in the short run, or much better in the short run, significantly better. But I think sets them up, like rebalances them a little bit, sets them up better for the next couple of years.
Okay, fair. The reason why I asked is, I guess, I'm with you on the Raptors, and what you said, I'm with you on both of them. But the reason why I said what I said was for really the Bulls' sake, because if now you're looking at a starting five, healthy starting five, that it has Lonzo, Pascal, Gary Trent Jr., Vucevic, and I'm missing...
DeRozan.
Yeah, DeRozan. Thank you. I apologize. DeMar DeRozan. That's a good starting five. But now you also have to hope that DeRozan keeps playing at this level, considering he's 33 right now. He may stay at the same level he's at now, which is a very good basketball player still, and his game is very translatable as he gets older. But so that's possible. but it all depends to me on how much the Bulls value Patrick Williams, because from what I hear from people thinking about Patrick Williams and the Bulls is that he's their future. Like, he's really their best young talent with the most potential. And you let that go, you're really all in right now. As much as we love Lonzo Ball, you and I, Grant, are Lonzo fans. I don't know about you, Mo, but we love Lonzo. So if he stays healthy and as good of a player he is, I feel like whenever the drop off of DeRozan occurs, you're now left with Lonzo, Siakam, Gary Trent Jr., who's a good player, and Vooch. Siakam's really good, but I just don't know.
This is where the other moves come into play. Like, if I were the Bulls, I would sell high on DeRozan right now. That's what I would do. I don't know. They love DeRozan. I don't think they would necessarily do that. But like this is basically me being the GM. Here's the first move I would make, and then I'll continue to try to move DeRozan and Vucevic and try to find some other pieces, some younger pieces around those guys too.
Yeah. Okay. Then I'm with you. That makes sense to me. I'm with you. Well, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with Grant as far as like that's one move of probably if they make that move, you make two to three more, and basically sell DeRozan, sell Vucevic, kind of reset, but don't be completely like you won't be completely bad at that point. I don't think Lonzo's coming back this year. Saw the video of him running, so I think Lonzo is out of the picture this year.
Yeah,
it'd be a miracle if he came back at this point. But even still, like going into next year, like they're not winning a championship this year. So even like if I'm the Chicago going into next year, I'm thinking like if I have Siakam and Lonzo, you call contenders for DeRozan and for Vucevic, which means you're going to get a solid package back for both of them because you call contenders and see what they're willing to give. And so when you go in there to the next year with Trent Jr., Lonzo, Siakam, whatever you get back for also like DeRozan and Vucevic, I think like Chicago would be like a really, really good team next year, or even could go into the offseason and all those trades they make, they still could make some moves and wiggle some things around, because we know every summer there's a star or there's somebody who wants out of some type of significance that Chicago's like, we've accumulated enough picks, enough young guys, this and that. We got Siakam, we got Trent Jr., Lonzo's coming back, where we could make a swing at one of the big fishes that kind of won out the next year. So I do like it. And especially because he's saying like, it's the start of selling completely for Chicago. So that definitely makes sense. So you still have a watchable product and probably a playoff, at least a play-in, but a playoff product that could maybe win a first round series. If you make a bunch of moves, you still could have a pretty decent team that could go to the playoffs and could maybe win a series. So Chicago, if they sold the right way, they could still be a good team and have a bright future.
Yeah, let's just also mention, like, their cupboard would not be entirely bare from this trade. Like, they would still have Alex Caruso, Ayeta Sunmo, and Javante Green, who are all solid players, like solid rotation players. So, you make more moves with DeMar DeRozan and Vucevic, get a few other pieces. You've got something there. You got a roster. So,
yeah, fair enough. I like it a lot. Okay. So I'll go next, and this one might be out there. So we'll see. So the Thunder, the Oklahoma City Thunder, trade Jalen Williams, Lou Dort, Alexei Pokuševski, 2023 Clippers first, 2024 Clippers first, 2026 Clippers first, because they have so many first round picks. Simon, funny. Four. This was hard for Toronto's OG Anunoby. So first off, the money works. The money works on all the levels. Second, while I think the Thunder would likely want to cash a small amount of their treasure chest of draft picks for a bigger name than OG Anunoby, as we mentioned before, that 3-and-D prototype is just so very rarely on the trade block. It has to be the perfect scenario for a team to want to trade that type of player. Like you said, with the Suns and Mikal Bridges, it would have to be perfect for Phoenix to want to trade Mikal. We're in that situation with Toronto, which is why OG's in trade discussions forever. We're in that situation. Now, could the Thunder buy low on Jonathan Isaac? Maybe. Minnesota probably doesn't trade Jaden McDaniels. Same definitely goes for Jaylen Brown. Patrick Williams for the Bulls, could they somehow get him? Maybe, probably not. Maybe they swing for the fence and trade for Bradley Beal or something. Who knows? But to me, that depends on how much they value Josh Giddey. If they love Josh Giddey, I don't think the Thunder trade Bradley Beal because he would have to be included in that trade based on what I was looking at. So he'd have to be there. Now, Toronto could also do the same. They could also want Josh Giddey. But for a team that's publicly in tank mode, maybe they'd settle for a crap ton of first-round picks. So imagine Josh Giddey, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, OG Anunoby, Chet Holmgren. We don't know what Chet is yet, but I still think he'll be a really good NBA player as your top four in a starting five. That's really fun, y'all. That's a fun top four in a starting five. A lot of versatility, a lot of defense, and just fun. And then the Thunder, I mean, they could still get feisty in upcoming drafts as well. Again, they have just an insane amount of picks. They have so much equity that the world's kind of their oyster. Whatever they want to do, they have the equity to go do it. I don't think they have the player personnel, but they have the draft equity to go do it. So it's just something to think about. It was my totally out of left field trade to see what y'all think. So what y'all think?
I like it. That's a lot. But okay, so they have 14 first round picks over the next 6 years? Just so something. Yeah, you're going to have to come up. If you want to be better, and you're going to have to come up off those picks at some point. I think of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, OG Anunoby. What's his name? That's not playing. Oh my God.
Chet Holmgren.
Chet. I think you make that trade looking into next year. And having Josh Giddey, I think now you're young, you get a solid piece. My only thing with OG Anunoby is I think everybody's just under the wagon where he'd be a lot better somewhere else. And how much does he improve a team? Like, is he really good because he's in Toronto and they're great at developing talent, because that's what they do? They develop within. And if he goes somewhere else, Toronto reminds me of Miami. Going to go get a player off that roster, how much better are they off of it? Because we feel like Anunoby has more potential than being produced in Toronto. But to me, that's where I'm hesitant, is there's a couple rosters like the Spurs, the Heat, and the Raptors. When I look to trade for a player, I don't want to trade too much because a lot of those guys off those rosters tend to not be as good when they leave those rosters and go somewhere else. But if I'm OKC, I got enough where I could basically do that trade. And if it doesn't work out, who cares? It is one of those, he is a good player at the end of the day. He will be good. Will you unlock his potential? I'm not sure. But you have so much that even in hindsight, if all you got was a good OG Anunoby, I didn't give up much. Essentially with as draft rich as they are, you still didn't give up much. You still would have enough to give up for a superstar eventually if you just gave up a boatload of draft picks. So I do like it. I don't love it.
That's fair. Okay, Grant.
I think the thing I dislike about it most is that it really sets the price high for OG, and it might be the accurate price.
That's what I'm saying.
And that that is a lot. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
But it might be what it takes, and that really hurts my heart as a Grizzlies fan, because the Grizzlies can't match that. I'll say Jaylen Williams looks really good, and I think the
really
Thunder
good, right?
love him. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure they would want to do anything with him right now, not at least wait a little bit. This might be something that maybe they do more in the offseason, so they're not hurting their draft.
Oh yeah, that's for
sure. Draft position, and they can see more of what they've got in Jaylen Williams. But yeah, I mean, I don't hate it really for either team. I think it's a big package. It's a lot, but it really might be with what the Raptors demand, and ultimately what OG demands from any team. Pretty close to that. I have an OG trade later that I don't think would not match that package, but it's pretty big, but would not match that package. So I hope that's not the asking price, but it definitely might be.
Look, man, I hope it's not the asking price too. I'm just going off of what, you know, the reports are saying that Masai was like, I would want a Donovan Mitchell level trade package or a Rudy Gobert level trade package for OG Anunoby. And the, all of NBA Twitter was like, oh my God. Like if that's really what it takes to get OG Anunoby, then holy crap. Like this trade may never happen. Like that's such a ridiculous amount of picks. And there's not picks. Well, yes, picks, but also just trade equity for a player who's, yeah, like you said, Mo, he's good. He's a good player. He's a good 3-and-D guy, but he also gets hurt a ton. He's also inconsistent with his shot. Like he's not a star. He's a good player, but he's not a star. He just fits that prototype mold that every single team in the NBA needs, not even just wants, needs. Every team needs that type of player if you want to be good. So that's why his trade value is that high. It's not necessarily production. It's just he's that mold of guy that teams just fall head over heels for. That this might be what it takes. Jay, I agree with you, Grant. Jaden Williams is great. He's been having a really good season. I like him a lot. But it would take, you know, it would take a young guy like that to get OG. I really believe that. That's why I think.
Yeah.
I didn't include Giddy in it because Giddy's better, but. Hell, they might even try and want him if this were a real possibility, because
they're not trading Giddy for anyone who's not a superstar. I'll say on the Thunder, just one like a couple pieces that really interest me and then I think contenders I would keep an eye on and try to go get are Aaron Wiggins and Cambridge Williams. I think that duo right there, if I was a contender, I would be looking find a way, could probably buy them fairly cheap. You know, maybe a couple of protected first rounders and some salary filler or something like that. But I really like Aaron Wiggins and he's not getting really much run in OKC. And then Kenrich Williams is just like a very solid, like kind of what every team needs, but like a much, much cheaper version of what every team needs than like OG Anunoby or anything is. So just wanted to note that. I like that duo a lot.
Fair enough. Mo, you got one?
So as far as a trade, no. Okay. Y'all are too good for me. Like
that's this, fine. Grant.
The only thing I would say is Denver should go get Damian Lillard. Like that's should find a way to go get Damian Lillard. And that was a trade I thought about, but like, I don't have like a real, I don't know how the money would work, but Denver should go get Damian Lillard and Damian Lillard should willingly want to go play with, it's going to cost you Jamal Murray. It's going to be a fat package. It's going to cost you either one of Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr. But just in the thought process, I think Portland kind of needs to let Dame go. I think Dame needs to let the loyalty thing go. I think Denver could win a championship this year. And if they added Dame, and, you know, I know Jamal Murray's kind of coming off an injury, so you'd be hesitant if you're Portland, but you're also trying to rebuild. And you can rebuild with a Jamal Murray, a Bones Highland, some future first round picks. And I think, like I said, I don't know how the money works, but I think like Denver should be calling and just begging Damian Lillard and Portland to part ways. And I think Dame and Denver with a Dame, MPJ, Nikola Jokic, like now I think that makes them like serious, like top of the West contenders. Yeah. And you're trying to go all in on a championship. So as far as a full blown trade, I don't know how it worked, but I think Denver needs to go get Dame.
I can't remember whose podcast I said that exact sentiment on, Mo. I can't remember if it was this one or another, like
I think it was this
tennis
one.
Pot. Maybe it was probably this one. I definitely said that same sentiment where it's like Denver and Damian Lillard is basically a match made in heaven. That's such a really good pairing. Dame and Nikola Jokic. Dame is a better Jamal Murray. Like, let's just be real about that. Dame is a better
version. Way better.
he's a way better version of Jamal Murray. They have a similar offensive archetypes defensively. Jamal's maybe a little better because he's a little bigger, but they're both not great defenders. But offensively, it's the same game. They're basically the same game. Dame's even more explosive going to the rim, and he's looking like old Dame right now. He's balling. So if this is a possibility, a real possibility, again, we're not NBA GMs. We don't know what the communications are. But if this is a real thing, and Denver's talking to Portland somehow, and if this is possible, I'd do it. I just do it because, I get goosebumps thinking about Jokic and Dame together. That would be so much fun. Oh my God, that would be so fun. All right, Grant, I'll let you finish off. Unless if you have a comment on the thing, please go ahead. But I'll let you your last two trades, and then you can move forward.
Okay. Yeah. 100% agree. Both teams should do it. If I'm Denver, as long as Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. are the only two players I have to include in that trade, and then picks, like as long as I don't have to include like Bruce Brown, like start breaking down my rotation too much, then I'm 100% pulling the trigger on it. I don't think Portland's going to trade Dame. I just think that's where the trade reaches impasse. They're just like those two are too attached to each other. But I think both teams should do it. So I love it. Let's start with this one. So I think the Clippers need a point guard, right? We can all agree on that. They need an upgrade of the point guard position. And the Raptors seem to be souring a little bit on Fred VanVleet. So wanted to get a trade package out there for those guys. So I've Fred VanVleet and Chris Boucher going to the Clippers, also gives them another big body, which they don't really have behind Zubats right now. For Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson, Terrence Mann, BJ Boston, and then I have 2 second-round picks here. That seems kind of low now looking at it. But maybe a first and a second round. I don't think Fred VanVleet's value is really as high as you might think right now. Like I think he's having a down year. So then just a couple young wings and Terrence Mann and Brandon Boston Jr. The Clippers or the Raptors clear a bunch of cap space here. And then get 2 veterans that they could repackage into more, and then, you know, a couple picks. Seems like it's a low offer, but I think it might actually be appropriate. So what do y'all think?
I mean, I personally like it just because it does give the Clippers a position of need. They need a point guard desperately bad. As a Grizzlies fan, that wouldn't make me happy because it makes the Clippers definitely better. And while we're still kind of in a holding pattern to see like when will they be fully healthy, what's happening with PG, Kawhi and their health, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, push comes to shove. If the Grizzlies face the Clippers in a 7-game series in the playoffs against a fully healthy Clippers, if they had Fred VanVleet, even without, I would be scared. Like, I would be very scared. I don't want to face a healthy Kawhi and Paul George in the playoffs. That's not a fun experience. So hearing them get Fred VanVleet, hear them get the point guard that they desperately need, that table setter that we've been saying that the Clippers need for a very long time, is scary. That is a scary proposition. So for that reason only, I hate it, Grant. No. For that reason only, I hate it. But no, I like the trade for both teams. Maybe the price is a little bit low, like you said, but I like it. What about you, Mo?
Yeah, I mean, I like the trade. I'm with Grant as like, to me, that's like a Clippers are going all in on this year move. Yeah. I know VanVleet's having like a down year, but I think he'd fit perfectly. Then you would have a him and John Wall kind of point guard thing. My thing is with the Clippers is if you pull that trigger, you're kind of telling the rest of the world that you're going all in this year. And they need to, essentially, because the Clippers project of Kawhi and Paul George has essentially been a failure. No conference finals appearance, no finals appearance, no real success with them two together. And I understand they haven't been healthy, but, you know, health is wealth in the NBA. And so if you're not healthy, the experiment still can fail. So I think it'd be going all in on this year. And I also think if the Clippers made that move and didn't get to the finals, basically, I think like next year going into the offseason, I think they would have a conversation about just kind of blowing it up all together. So I think if you make that move, you're going all in on this year, which you need to. And then I think if it fails, you go in, we tried everything we could. We tried to improve the roster. We hoped you were healthy, this and that. And then I think at that point, the Clippers blow it up, because if they make that move and nothing comes of it as far as really anything less than a finals appearance, I mean, then where are the Clippers from here for the next 3 to 4 years? And that's where I blow it up and basically just start rebuilding. Let a team buy high on Kawhi, hoping that he stays healthy. A team will buy really high on Paul George. He's been relatively healthy the past 2 years. I think, you know, last year when he got hurt, you know, he came back for the playoffs, but I think he would have came back a lot sooner had Kawhi. I think he kind of played the wait and see, like I'm hurt but not injured. But at the same time, I'm a wait and see. And if we make the playoffs, I'll come back. If not, then I'll just ride it out in the next season. But I think teams would buy super high on Paul George or Kawhi. But I think if you make that move, you go all in on this year And, you know, if you don't win a championship off of that trade or get to a championship, then basically you just kind of blow it up. So I think it'd be like a win-win for the Clippers because they could go all in on this year with Van Vliet. And then they can also be like, okay, where do we go from here if it's not successful? So I think it sets the Clippers up for the right now and the future.
I agree. One thing I want to say, they did make one Western Conference Finals 2 years ago when they faced the Suns.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They did get there.
They made it. Kawhi got hurt, and I think Phoenix went in 5 or 6.
Yeah, Kawhi got hurt. I forgot.
Yeah, they made one Western Conference Final. But yes, overall, I agree. The whole sentiment that you said, Mo, I'm fully with you.
They don't really have a choice but to like go all in because of how little success they've had as this deep into the Kawhi Paul George experience. Cool.
Yeah, what is this year four? Is this year four together?
I think it's year three. Three? I think
it's four, but Kawhi like sat out a whole year. So like essentially them two together, because they got together in what, 2019, right?
This is year. Oh yeah, he's okay. Yeah, this is their fourth year. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but Kawhi sat out all the last year. So at the same
time, Kawhi sat out a year. Yeah.
They're
playing for 3 years, but this is year four of the Clippers and no real success. Like,
yeah, it's a long time. All right, last one. So obviously had to work the Grizzlies into a trade.
Good.
Raptors are also going to be involved. That's the third trade I've had them in. So clearly, I want the Raptors to make a move. So yeah, I had to find a way to get the Grizz OG Anunoby, and it's hard. I think there are a few problems with like any OG trade, and particularly a trade to Memphis. We discussed this earlier, but the biggest issue with the Raptors roster is that their best player in Siakam and their best young player in Scottie Barnes both play the same position. Like, so OG isn't really the issue positionally. So if they're trying to rebalance the roster, he's not really the guy that they need to move. He fits really well with either of those guys. If you were to move one of those guys and just focus on one, and obviously fits well with the rest of the roster, just like he fits with basically any roster. And like we said, he's exactly what every good team needs and wants. So why are the Raptors moving that guy? Why is any team moving that guy? I think the most realistic reason they would trade him is if they were upgrading to a superstar, you know, a la a Kevin Durant trade or something like that. The Grizzlies don't have that player available. There's no superstar that the Grizzlies are trading or star. They're not trading Desmond Bane. They're not trading Jaren Jackson. They're definitely not trading John Morant for OG Anunoby. So that trade's not happening. So the other reason that the Raptors might trade him is if they're doing some sort of teardown, which seems to me much less likely, especially because, again, why would they trade OG when he's pretty young and exactly one of the type of guys that they'll want to have on that new roster. But let's just throw that out the window and assume that they do want to do a teardown and they want to trade OG as part of that. What the Grizzlies do have to trade is a reasonable facsimile of OG and Dylan Brooks and a collection of young wing players and some draft capital. But if the Raptors are tearing down, they're trading OG, it's pretty unlikely that they're going to want Dylan Brooks, a guy who's kind of just a replacement for OG Anunoby, just a lesser version of him, over young guys in draft capital. So I wanted to bring in another team to funnel Dylan to for some more of that stuff. So this is my only three-team trade. Try to keep most of them simple, but this one had to get a little complicated. But then the other problem with that is if a team is trading for Dylan Brooks, why wouldn't they just trade for OG? Like, why would you choose to trade for Dylan Brooks instead of just trading for OG, right? So the counter here, the Mavericks are the perfect team for this because, like I said earlier, they don't have enough to get a player like OG. They don't have enough to build a package without completely gutting their roster. So what they can do is come in, contribute at a smaller level, get Dylan Brooks, a really useful player for them, and then facilitate the Grizzlies getting OG if they want to help their Western Conference rival. The Mavericks do really well in the Grizzlies. And I think part of it is because we have no one to guard Luka, and OG maybe is a really good player to guard Luka. So maybe they wouldn't want to help the Grizzlies get that player, but, who knows? We're working off a lot of assumptions here. So the trade to get to finally the trade, the Grizzlies get OG and Reggie Bullock. The Mavericks get Dylan Brooks and Otto Porter Jr. And the Raptors get Zaire Williams, Josh Green, Danny Green, Frank Ntilikina, a first round pick, 2023 first round pick from the Grizzlies, 2025 first round pick for the Mavericks, and then their own second round pick in 2024 from the Grizzlies as well. So ultimately, Raptors get a few young guys, free up a bunch of cap space, and then get two first rounders and their own second back. Might not be enough, but the Grizz do have other young guys and picks to play with if it's necessary, if they feel like they need to add more. But that's at least a good starting point.
I love it, man. I'm so glad you brought in a three-team trade. That's as big of an NBA fan, and I hope I'm a knowledgeable NBA fan. I'm not good at three-team trades. I don't know why. It hurts my brain too much to even figure out multi-team trades. It hurts. So you're way better than I am. So I'm glad you brought up a three-team trade. It's a lot. And I think the logic for Dallas wanting to have Dylan Brooks is interesting. And you mentioned all the variables, and I don't need to repeat them, but they're all very fair. As a Grizzlies fan, I would love to have Oche on the team. If that's what it takes, you keep Desmond Bain, you keep Ja, Jaren, you know, you keep the core basically together, and you add Oche Anunoby. Good God, that's not just a really good team. That's a top tier championship contending team, for sure. So I mean, I love it. What about you, Mo?
Yeah, I think Memphis, they're right there, like on the cusp of being able to win a championship. And so I don't want to call Oche Anunoby a minor upgrade, but like that they're like a OG away from really being like they could win it. Like, really, I'd be like, that team really could win a championship. I mean, I kind of think that now, health, I guess, has kind of been the issue with Memphis, in and out of the lineup kind of thing. Bane was hurt. Ja gets a little banged up. He hasn't really been injured this year, but he gets a little banged up. JJJ, you know, he gets injured. So, but I think like if they added OG, and you look at it and they're like, I'm like, they're coming into the playoffs healthy. It's tough to really see a team beat that Memphis team. Like, they're not that far away from really being, I mean, they're title contenders today. So if they add OG, like that kind of puts them over the top, because that's how close they are. They're not a Bradley Beal or Zach LaVine or Kevin Durant away. They're literally just an upgrade like that away from like, okay, this team could not only get to the finals, they could win the championship. So I definitely love it from Memphis side. I think with the way Masai has been talking, I think he probably want a little more than that. If I'm Toronto, but there's a whole bunch of variables, but the way he was talking, like, I think he would definitely want more draft capital, if anything. I think he's trying to be the Utah Jazz or the Oklahoma City Thunder, where I just got picks on top of picks, and, you know, look, three teams will feature half the first round in 2025 at this point. I do like the trade. I really like it more for the Grizzlies than anybody, especially adding Reggie Bullock too. Like, that's an underrated, like, hey, this guy, you would only need him for one game in a series to get hot and give you 4 to 5 threes in a game. And I think he can do that. He's inconsistent, but for Dallas, he has more of a premier role, where with Memphis, he would just be like, if you could give us one game of you caught fire and hit 3 to 5 threes, you contributed, you did your job. We don't need Bullock for a 7-game series, where I think Dallas needs him to show up more often than not. So I think that would be the underrated part of the trade for Memphis, where you get OG, okay, now, but then now you have a knockdown shooter who I'm not asking to be more consistent, like be consistent more often than not. I just need in a 7-game series, one, maybe 2 games if we go on a cold spurt, but basically in a 7-game series, if Bullock can give you 12 to 15 one night, I think Memphis wins that series.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. That's something I loved, was just adding one more shooter to the trade for the Grizzlies. And then didn't even think about that, just how much of a bigger role he has to play for Dallas than the smaller role he plays for the Grizzlies. The devil's advocate for my own trade here, because I have Dylan Brooks is such a polarizing player around the league and in my own mind. So, I think he confounds me, and this is, I've flip-flopped on this a little bit, but OG has said repeatedly, he wants a bigger role, right? And he's not getting that in Memphis. Like, he's going to be the fourth option in Memphis, which he's probably the fourth option right now, on the Raptors. So he's not going up in the pecking order at all. So if he's going to come in and be disgruntled about that, that could be an issue for a team that I think is so built on their chemistry and everybody just buying in. The front office has been extremely intentional about finding guys who are like team oriented and are really fun to play with, and really just like they thought would gel as a group. And Dylan Brooks is obviously a huge part of that as an emotional leader, and kind of the voice of our defense. So stirring that pot a little bit does scare me. Probably not enough to not do this, but maybe not enough to overpay like I maybe would have early. I thought I would have early in the season, just kind of throw everything and go get OG, because like you said, he were like that piece away from being a contender. But because of the chemistry piece and how important that is for the Grizzlies, it does scare me a little bit. Francis, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
No, I think that's a, that's also a very good point, and I think it's a congestion. Sorry. And I think that's a very good point, and something that a lot of sports fans in general, I think, forget that side of trades, is how much it shakes up locker rooms, shakes up team chemistry. And as you said, Grant and Mo, I'm sure you know this as well, the Grizzlies are, they're talented as hell, but they also love each other. They love playing basketball with each other. They love, they support each other so much. The whole locker room, it just fits, it gels. And the front office has done a phenomenal job of that. I listened to Desmond Bain's guest appearance on JJ Redick's podcast, and they talked about Dylan Brooks. And like, it's clear that though Dylan can take some boneheaded shots, and the Grizzlies know that, Dylan Brooks knows that, the coaching staff knows it, they still love the guy. You know, it could it all just be mouth service, and really in the back, in actual the locker room, they're a bit like, ah, oh, Dylan, why are you taking those shots? It should be going to someone else. But I don't think it is. I really think that's a genuine sentiment from Desmond Bain, that that Dylan Brooks is the heartbeat of that team. He's there. He's really what drives them forward. And if you trade him, there goes your heartbeat. And you may hope that OG can fill that role back, but we don't, like you said, he may not buy in, and that may hurt chemistry. And chemistry is a aspect of sports that I think a lot of fans and even media members forget about when they talk about free agent signings or even trades, because the basketball fit might be hand in glove, but the locker room team chemistry side might not. So I think it's a very good point, Grant.
Yeah, I think you're right. They all still love him, you know, despite the shots he has. What we can't have is his attitude being, with how hard I play defense, they can take some of, like, which was his quote, with how hard I play defense, with what I do on that end, they can live with some of the shots I take. That can't be his attitude, that like, I'm going to go out there and just like take whatever I want because I play so hard on defense. Like, if he needs to fully buy in, and his shot selection has been better this year. I won't go too deep into it, but like all the numbers are pointing to a shot selection being better this year. So that's good. But like, I just the guys can love him, and they can love him no matter what, but like, that can't be his attitude to have. He needs to be like, okay, well, what does the team need? But anyways, we've spent a lot of time on trades, so we can move on.
Lots of time on trades. So yeah, speaking of time, that's funny, because we were talking about how quickly time moves before we start recording. So speaking of time, let's skip the most improved player thing, because we can talk about that at future pod. It's just mid-season, so we'll save that. And let's combine Brooklyn Nets talk with really discussing the top two in each conference or the field. And you can even mention them when we talk about matchups with the play-in tournament. So let's move on to this talking point that I really wanted to hear y'all's thoughts on. Would y'all take the top two in each conference, Boston, Brooklyn in the East, Denver, and Memphis in the West, or the field? Because there, look, NBA parity is thriving this year. There's so much parity, as that's probably one of the key buzzwords for every single NBA podcast, is parity. So if you're listening, take a shot for every time we mention that word. So what do y'all think? Do we go with top two in each conference, who should be the two best teams in each conference and the four best in the NBA? Or do you like, nah, I'm still going to actually take the field? So, Mo, I want to hear your thoughts first, bro.
I'm going to take the field. And there's really a couple teams that would make me take the field. Is I'm not out on Golden State. You know, going into the year last year, like, I was all in on Golden State. You know, everybody was counting them out. And I'm like, bro, as long as they're healthy, they'll be okay. And I think that's still the same situation. It might be even worse for teams, because you might be the one seed having to play Golden State. So, or the two seed, which kind of sucks for you. It'd be great for the NBA if Memphis stays at the two seed and gets to play Golden State in the first round. I think that'd be, you know, great for the NBA. I think that's what the NBA would want. I think fans would want that. But yeah, I'm taking the field, and it's really Golden State and then Milwaukee. Like, I just can't be like, yeah, one of the top two teams are going to beat them. I think Milwaukee right now is pretty banged up. Giannis hasn't played the past couple games. Chris Middleton really hasn't even played double-digit games this year. Giannis is in a slump, but at the same time, like, I very well could see Milwaukee coming out of that. I can't count Philly out yet. I know I should. I know I probably should. I shouldn't be in on Philly at all. Miami is a matchup problem for a lot of teams, as we've seen the past few years. Like, at the end of the day, no matter what the product looks like in the regular season, playoff Jimmy. So there's just too many teams that I factor in being able to beat those four teams, where I'm going to take the field because, yeah, I just can't put a stamp that I see Denver or Memphis winning the championship, or I don't feel safe saying Brooklyn or Boston would win the championship. So I'm going to take the field.
Okay. Grant?
Yeah, I think this question is a little unfair because it's a lot of teams in the first group and then a lot of teams in the second group, and that's just like a lot to pick between. Basically it's those top four versus Bucks, 76ers, Cavs, Heat, Warriors, maybe throw in the Mavericks and Clippers, Pelicans. Maybe Suns, if you want to go that deep, probably not. So that's just a lot of teams in the field. So I think probably got to go field. I think because, and we're gonna talk about the Nets, but I agree with you, Mo, like, don't feel like 100% confident in calling the Nets, you know, like a surefire top tier contender, even though they're second and on this crazy run. And the Grizzlies and Nuggets are really good, but haven't yet, like, proven it in the playoffs fully. Even though I think the Grizzlies had a great run in the playoffs last year and you know, play the Warriors, the toughest of any team they played. So I don't want to go deep in that, but haven't gone extremely far in the playoffs yet for either of those teams. So yeah, they're not like the, you know, playoff tested veteran elite contender that, you know, you might normally see at the top. So yeah, probably got to go field.
I mean, I asked the question knowing that y'all would say the field, and you know, my brain says field. That's the logical choice. I mean, they're just so, as you mentioned, there's so many teams that when they're fully healthy can beat anybody in the NBA. Like you said, Mo, Milwaukee, Philly, though I'm also not a Philly believer, they still have the talent to do it. I'm a big Cavs guy. I was a big Cavs guy to start the year. I still am now. When they are fully healthy, we know how good they are. They had they were first in that rating for a period of time when they were fully healthy, or at least top three. That's a very good basketball team that I think can beat absolutely anybody in the NBA in a 7-game series. So, and they're fifth right now because of injuries. They've fell back a smidge, but that's a scary team. And
they're 1.5 game behind Brooklyn right now for second. So, and exactly. I think they're still third in net rating overall.
Okay, cool. Right now, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're still a crazy, crazy good basketball team. Yeah. The third in net rating. excuse me. So yeah, field is a logical choice. When I was phrasing this question, I was like, do I go 1 through 3 in each conference to kind of slim it down? But even then, like, it's a hard question. The reason why, just play devil's advocate for picking the top two in each conference. The Celtics are, I mean, the Celtics are probably the safest bet by far for of those top four to make it, to win a title again. And I think it's a fair bet. They're the favorite by a pretty wide margin right now. They just made an NBA final last season. They're looking better. They're looking hungry and they look ready to win an NBA title. This is what the Boston Celtics have been building for about 8 years. This moment to be the best team in the NBA, run away, have the playoff experience for Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, et cetera, have the pieces around them to go win a championship. This is their season. If they don't win a title this year, I believe it'll be it'll be a letdown for Boston, for sure. If they don't win a title, this is their best shot with how open the NBA is. This is their best shot. So that makes me, I guess, that's the devil's advocate aspect of the field, is how good Boston is, but also how good I think the Grizzlies can and will be when they're fully healthy. Same thing goes for Denver. The top four in these conferences are the top four for valid reasons. Milwaukee has health issues, I agree. New Orleans, they're a good team, but Grant, you were right with picking New Orleans to be this high. I wasn't that high on them. You were absolutely right on your Pelicans pick, but I think it's a very good top four. But the big one for me is Boston. So that's like the devil's advocate side for picking the top four. But yeah, I mean, Field's the right answer. I just wanted to see what y'all thought.
Let me go 538 in their two prediction models. They have a Raptor player ratings based model and then an ELO based motto. And the Raptor model has the Celtics, Grizzlies, and Nuggets with a 59% chance of winning the finals combined between those three teams. And then the ELO based forecast has a 57% chance between those three teams of winning the finals. So the numbers back up there should be this at those top three teams. That's not even including the Nets, who have a 9% and a 10%. No, a 6% and a 10%. So
And let's talk about those Nets really briefly before we, get to the end of the pod, because I've been saying for a while, when the whole Ben Simmons stuff, that whole trade happened, I was high on the basketball fit. I thought Ben Simmons, yeah, he's not a scorer. That's fine and well and good, but you don't need him to be an aggressive, go get you 15 points a game at least on Brooklyn. You don't need that. You have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, two generational scorers. What the Nets did need is defense and another guy to distribute the ball and get an offense flowing, which is what Ben Simmons does. He's one of the best in the NBA at doing that. And he's a phenomenal defender and a really good rebounder. He's just a good basketball player, all-around player. And he had that night a couple nights ago where he had 0 points. But he had a bunch of rebounds, bunch of assists, and still impacted the game at a very high level, though he didn't score. Like that, you don't need that from Ben Simmons. And I always thought the basketball fit was really good. And he's proving that so far. And Kevin Durant got hurt again, which is the biggest concern if I were a Nets fan, is that injury issue going to rear its ugly head again for Kyrie? It's already reared its head for Kevin Durant, but does it get worse when it comes to the end of the year and playoffs? Can you trust them to be fully healthy? We don't know. We just don't know. So that causes concern, but it's good to see, at least from my perspective, the Brooklyn Nets play good basketball. It's the basketball I thought they'd be able to play when all the drama and all the tension around the team is kind of subsided. It's a really good basketball team that I think healthy can win an NBA title. Absolutely. They can definitely win a title, and it's cool to see them playing good basketball. Mo, what are your thoughts on the Nets?
I mean, they're definitely title contenders. The Nets are, they're really good. And it even goes to the part of like the field is like Boston, like it's all good what they're doing. And I understand they made it to the finals, but it's a lot different. When, it's cool when you're playing on a random Tuesday night and you're playing, the Houston Rockets or the San Antonio Spurs in between, and then you get a good team or whatever. But it's a lot different for Boston when you're going to have to play against Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant in a 7-game series. And I know they swept them last year, but I think the Nets are on a mission, and I think it seems like they're kind of going all in. Ben Simmons is back. How you feel about him is like, if you value him, cool. I do. For what he does bring on the basketball court, like for him to improve on being aggressive and putting the ball in the bucket. I don't like walking away playing 40 minutes and no points. I don't like that. 3 shot attempts. I don't care who you are. I don't like that if you're one of the 3 best players on the team. But I think with the Nets, part of me almost thinks they should trade Ben Simmons, but I don't know what his value is around the league. Like, I don't think you'll get fair value back, but part of me does think like, if you can upgrade a little bit in depth, with getting Ben Simmons, giving up Ben Simmons, I think the Nets, that could put them over the top. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are elite. They're elite in the playoffs. They know how to show up and play. But it just seems like they're out to prove something. Like, it seems like this crazy offseason and Kevin Durant wanted out. And obviously all the stuff with Kyrie Irving, it just seems like they kind of decided to play ball. And you see how good they could be when they just play ball. And that's what they're doing right now is you don't hear much from KD. You ain't hearing nothing from Kyrie. They're just putting their head down and playing ball. Obviously, this month stretch will be tough without Kevin Durant. But at the same time, like, I think their head is focused on the playoffs. As long as they get in, they feel like they have a chance. And I think that's fair assessment from them with having Kyrie and Kevin Durant. So, yeah, I mean, if you told me they were going to win the championship, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I do think they're one of those teams, like, and they're just on a mission. Like, you see how good they are when they just buckle up, no drama, and play basketball. And there's been drama around them for the past, what, 3 years? And so now when they just decide to play ball, no drama, you ain't hearing nothing about the Nets, which is wild. When they're playing good, we don't talk about them. Like, we're not showing them enough love. You don't hear them on national media because there's no drama around them. They're just playing ball. And you wouldn't know that they're on an amazing stretch that they're on right now. So, yeah, I think the Nets easily – I don't want to say easily could win the championship, but – if you told me that's your favorite coming out of the Eastern Conference, I wouldn't be upset, especially I know Kevin Durant, he's seeking that other championship, and I think he's seeking validating his legacy by winning a championship outside of Golden State and alongside Kyrie Irving. I think that would shut up a lot of Kevin Durant legacy doubters. It would put him rightfully where he deserves all time and even current. Like, I just think it would add some respect to his name right now because Kevin Durant could tend to be disrespected.
Yeah, all great points for sure. Grant, what about you? Thoughts on the Nets?
I think like Ben Simmons watching him in the beginning of the year, I was just like, man, this guy has zero confidence. Like, this is not even close to the player, but like, waiting, just knew like he needed time. He was going to need time, wanted to be patient, and like slowly started to get getting better, but still he's gotten a lot better with his confidence. Still just watching him now. Like, if you go watch his highlights from like 2019, he just is not like the same player with his grab and go mentality, his aggressiveness. Great. Driving, attacking on the fast break. People have been sagging off him, but he would beat big guys who were in drop coverage and get to the rim and dunk on them. He's not doing that. He's not beating people off the dribble anymore. He used to have, touch around the baskets on these little like running hook shots or push shots. Doesn't seem like he has that really anymore. It's like every part of his game is just kind of taking a step back. It's not that he doesn't bring anything to the table, like y'all said. Like, his defense is still there. His playmaking is still there, and he brings a lot of size and like a lot to the floor. But like, it's not going to be tenable in the playoffs to me. Him and Nick Claxton have figured it out in the regular season, but teams are just going to go all in on just not guarding those guys in the playoffs, and that's just not going to work. I'm sorry, there's a spider on my wall.
Get it, get the spider.
I don't want to crush it.
Okay, that's nice.
No, I don't like the goo, honestly.
Oh, also fair. Go ahead. Are you just like moving, like shoving it away? What are you doing?
Yeah, I've got a piece of paper. I'm just sitting it the other way. I'm trying to keep it up in this wall so after we start recording, I can catch it and just like get it out of here.
Release it into the wild.
Release it, but yeah, it keeps like wanting to crawl. I don't know why they have an instinct to crawl straight towards the most dangerous thing in the room, which is me. Like, I'm going to kill you, my guy. Anyways, what was I talking about? The playoffs.
Playoffs. And how Nick Claxton and Ben Simmons, they're just going to key on, not guard him.
Yeah. That's just not – they've figured it out in the regular season, but it's just not going to be tenable in the playoffs. Teams are just going to rev up the not guarding those guys. So Ben Simmons has just got to be more aggressive. Like, they're not going to figure anything out like fully. I mean, obviously they're doing amazing, but like this team can't really reach his level until Ben Simmons looks at the basket more and gets more aggressive. He's not taking many free throws. He's shooting 41% from the free throw line last time I checked. That's not good. I think I would have loved the real peak version of Ben Simmons on this team. This version is working right now. I just don't think it's going to be workable in the playoffs. And yeah, it might take a trade down the road. I don't think they're gonna get like any value for him back right now. So I wouldn't do it now. I'd wait and see if he can rebuild some of his value. But I'm just not, I'm buying them as a good team, like very good team. Obviously Kevin Durant makes you pretty much a contender by himself. But I'm not really buying them as the second best team in the East or, one of the true elite title contenders.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. The thing you said about the Nets is very fair. It's really volatile. It's still a volatile team. It's good to see them find some consistency. But as a whole, there's still volatility with Ben Simmons with the health. So, you know, like Mo said, if we look back in June and they win the title, I wouldn't be surprised. But they still have a ways to get there. But for me, it's just good to see them playing good basketball. All right. So, you know, I know we said we talk about the teams we fear in the play-in, but, you know, this podcast has been going for a minute. Mo's got to go. I have to use the restroom. So I'm just going to close this show.
I got to catch a spider. And,
yeah, Grant has to kill a spider, which is, I think, also very important. So, Mo, before we get out of here, tell them where they can find you, brother.
Yeah, you can follow me at Mo_Cheese15 on Twitter, at Up in Flames Pod on Instagram. You can check out Up in Flames anywhere you get your podcasts. Also, make sure you check out Field Stormers, the weekly college football podcast at the network ran by me, myself, and Walker Bailey. Up in Flames will be dropping in the next couple days. But, you know, I appreciate you having me on, bro. We definitely going to have to do this more. I love talking ball with y'all. So, yeah. And I'm getting back into talking basketball. I've been so locked in on college football this year, really, is what really caught my attention. Yeah. So to be able to talk basketball again is really good.
I was so excited for there to be NBA basketball on ESPN during the day yesterday. I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, it was also a realization for me though. Like, damn,
yeah,
no college football on Saturday. Like, yeah. Football season is almost over. Like, we got a 1 o'clock NBA game on ABC. Like, it's full blown NBA season right now.
That's right. We're back. Grant, any parting words?
Nope, that's it for me.
All right, brother. Thank you, Grant. Thank you, Mo. And again, be sure to like the podcast, subscribe, give us 5 stars, all that good stuff. And until next time, peace.
Cool days, hot tops, with my blue face, ice pops. I'ma make a shoelace, necklace. Yeah, we whipping pops on Lexus. And I'm skipping school days, mic drops. Eyes on summer like Cyclops. Yeah, we falling off the sidewalk. Mama wants a home.